Amazon.com today.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
With Philip Coppens, talking ancient astronauts and other stuff with Gene and Chris in the Paracast. So the question I raised, kind of the devil's advocate look here. When you find these strange artifacts, like something that looked like a little tiny primitive helicopter, like a toy some years back, could these be just toys, something someone imagines rather than something real?
Umparts.
Well, precisely, and this is the reason why, Puma Punku is up there very highly. Now, again, Puma Punku, if it was a one-off without any need, just kind of like a guy doing it, then first of all, he was extremely devoted. He was also allowed to do so on sacred ground. And third of all, he did have technological tools at his disposal to do so. So it's not just that this was a guy freewheeling in his garage somewhere in the back lot of an unknown, boring suburban kind of prehistory. But with Baalbek, this changes. With Baalbek, you cannot go for the easy answers. Baalbek incorporates stones which weigh up to 2 tons. There are stones there, several of them, which are over 1 ton. These stones.
Wait a minute. They're 200 tons. I think the trilithalon is how big is the trilithalon?
There are stones in the platform which are up to 1,200 tons, and there is one in the quarry which is basically 1,900 tons. What we have is stones of enormous weight. The question is, how did these get transported? They clearly were. And at the end of the 20th century, basically there was no technology in place which could transport these. There was technology which could lift it, but not lift and transport. Yet somehow these were moved into place. They were lifted, they were taken from the quarry to where they eventually ended up. And that is the kind of stuff whereby you go, okay, scientists, please explain this, and science doesn't even address it. Science is actually quite interesting in saying that the Roman temple on top is really a temple which was the largest temple outside of the Roman Empire. The building stones used for that exceed pretty much just tiny bit, but still exceed the Roman engineering capabilities of their time. Scientists are quite clear about this, and they basically say that they don't really know how it was done, but that, it was just off, so it, as if it's kind of like, good enough. It's like, it's almost as saying, okay, we could build the Empire State Building, but that was as far as we went. And then you look right next to it and you find a taller structure than the Empire State Building. And you kind of want to say to science, okay, I know it's right next door and it's just slightly higher, but you said it's the small one next to it, which was at the summum of what we could build. So could you please explain the one next to it? Anyway, the fact, I think, is quite interesting that this expertise in building of Romans supersedes anything the Romans did precisely on a spot where the expertise in building, which, exceeds everybody's understanding up until a few decades ago. And to me, that is evidence that something in Baalbek, was definitely off, and that to some extent there was maybe an understanding or a knowledge which kept living there and helped Romans into the construction of their building works. But when it comes to building projects as a whole, at this moment in time, it is easier to say that they were built using some form of technology than to say that that technology by default was extraterrestrial. If you want to make that jump, then really you need to also rely on basically mythological or historical or anthropological records, which say that which basically goes that the locals are saying that they were not the ones building this, but that it were non-human intelligence who built this for them. And to some extent that is subjective in the sense that the locals might not know, they might have exaggerated, they might have invented, but they might also be telling the truth. that is, you know, amongst the scope. But just on the pure archaeological record, a building, you know, will only be a building. And it's a two-edged sword. If it was built from metal or from iron or something like that thousands of years ago, then it probably is no longer visible. So we do no longer have it. So the best chance of having something from that time is gone. What remains are buildings in stone, and these are buildings in stone. We can pinpoint the fact that they included high technology, but that it is it. You know, they are from terrestrial stone. Proving that they have an alien component is not easy. There always will have to be, I think, a contextual context for that. And that context is that there has to be supporting evidence from myths or legends which say that indeed these things were built by non-human intelligences.
Well, that raises the other question too. Is it possible here, rather than being from non-human intelligences, that we had some pretty advanced civilizations here on Earth thousands of years ago due to some kind of catastrophe, whatever, those civilizations died, vanished, and here we are?
Absolutely. And they are likely going to be the subject of my next book. But all of those things, you know, like the story of Atlantis, they don't end up in my book, basically because there is nothing to suggest that Atlantis had anything to do with ET or non-human intelligences.
But why then assume or even speculate on the possibility that it had to be ET if there could have been an Atlantis?
Because I'm not speculating. I am taking the mythological records of the ancient Egyptians and all these other people and saying that they themselves were saying that they were guided on the path of civilization by a non-human intelligence. You know, when it comes to the classical story, which probably illustrates this best, is the story of Awanis. Awanis is described by a guy called Berossus, and Awanis is basically said to have given civilization to the ancient Babylonians. He is described as a creature which was half fish, half man, who came out
There's something fishy about that.
Uh-huh. Who came out of the Persian Gulf.
Can I hear the bomb sound when I have jokes like that? No, because they say I tell bad jokes.
Uh-huh.
Well, there's something fishy about a fish guy being responsible for civilization.
All right, don't gild the lily here. Go ahead, please.
So basically, it's a creature which is described as half fish, half man, who comes out of the Persian Gulf by daytime, teaches, at night goes back into the Persian Gulf, the following morning or a few days later comes back, and this goes on for seven such creatures. He's remembered in Sumerian civilizations as the Apkallu. So you have the ancient Babylonians and to some extent the Sumerians saying that their civilization was given to them with the help of a non-human intelligence, Awanis and his likes. So I'm not speculating willy-nilly saying that we cannot explain something about the Babylonian civilization, so that by default it has to be ET. If there was no mythological evidence or historical evidence about a creature like Awanis, then yes, I would be speculating, and I would have to go through more hoops and loops to draw that conclusion. But in this case, it's our ancestors themselves who said that they were guided and instructed by non-human intelligences.
Well, can that be a little bit fanciful too? In the sense that we're reading stories now that may have had a partly fictional element. Didn't they write fiction then?
Actually, they don't. And this is a bit, did they write fiction then? We assume that they wrote, did they write fiction? Yes. They wrote fiction and it was clearly identifiable as fiction. But this idea, could it be fiction? Yes, everything is possible. But Berossus was the guy who writes history. And this is the big thing which science does when it comes to Atlantis. Plato was both historian and philosopher. And so when you have the likes of Ken Feeder who argue that Atlantis was not a real historical civilization, but that this is somehow the imagination of Plato, that he does this as an idealized state because he's going to give a lesson to his fellow Greeks as to how they are, really having dire morals and they need to have a moral lesson. And therefore he sees the civilization of Atlantis as something Plato invented. Well, Plato writes about Atlantis in a book solely dedicated to history.
And we'll get more into Plato's discussion of Atlantis and More with Philip Coppens. With Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
So here's what happened. I was placing an order online. The site went down. It just stopped responding. It took hours before it returned, but I'd already placed the order with another company. If your site goes down, you could lose business. And if you have a business or personal site, you'll want to know it's easy to run and it will stay online. At iWeb, your site is hosted on one of the most reliable networks in the world. Check it out. iWeb.com. That's iWeb.com. Fate Magazine provides true reports of the strange and unknown. Keep up with the latest on angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, life after death, and much, much more. To receive your free issue of Fate Magazine, call now at 1-800-728-2730 or visit their website at www.fatemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits.
Hey everybody, Jason Lewis here once again. These are hard times for investors. If you're like me, you just don't know where to put your money because there's a downside to every possible scenario. Now look, every portfolio needs a hedge for inflation. Gold has been the classic. I want to tell you, I want to be honest with you, commodities fluctuate. So you could lose money. Gold goes up and down. But every stable portfolio usually has an inflation hedge, and gold is, well, the gold standard. Washington is not going to get us out of this recovery. So you've got to protect yourself. Give it some thought, and if you're interested in converting your IRA to gold or would like to actually have it in your possession, call Midas Resources today at 1-800-686-2237. The U.S. dollar was once backed by gold, but it's lost a lot of its value since then. Call Midas Resources today, 1-800-686-2237 for gold. That's 1-800-686-2237, and tell them Jason Lewis sent you.
Plan a healthy garden easy and fast with OrganicaSeed.com. Easy because OrganicaSeed.com offers one of the largest online selections of organic, heirloom, non-hybrid, and untreated seeds, as well as tobacco and cotton seeds at low prices. Go to OrganicaSeed.com, spelled OrganicaSeed.com. OrganicaSeed.com. Remember, Organica Seed is healthy seed.
HempUSA.org has a revolutionary wonder food for detoxing the body and rebuilding the immune system.
Microplant powder can help unclog arteries and soften heart valves while removing heavy metals, virus, fungus, bacteria, and parasites. Plus, it cleans and purifies the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. Keep your body clean with microplant powder. Visit us at HempUSA.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
Big Berkey water filters are in high demand. Storable foods are also in high demand. BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com has always kept our focus on the Berkey water filter products. But increasingly, our customers have been asking for storable foods. After months of research, BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com now offers great-tasting, long-lasting, storable foods. These ready-to-eat meals are packed in airtight nitrogen pouches. All you do is just add water. And because they're sealed so well, they come with a 25-year shelf life. Combine our Berkey water filters, which are powerful enough to purify treated, untreated, or even stagnant pond water with our storable foods, and you have a winning combination. Remember, we offer free shipping on every order over $50, and GCN listeners receive 5% off all ceramic filter systems. Visit BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com or call 877-99-BERKEY. That's BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com or call 877-99-BERKEY today.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And if you'd like to catch up on past episodes, we have hundreds of shows for you to download direct from theparacast.com. That's theparacast.com. Or check us out at iTunes.
Atlantis and More, Ancient Civilizations, What Was Plato Talking About, Writing About, with Philip Coppens on the Paracast. So let's continue that discussion. Let's take it further. So this book was a book about history, factual history, and if this is thrown in there, Therefore, we assume, Philip, this has to have been intended as factual information.
Yes. And so at one point, you know, what the scientists are then saying is, well, you know, Plato is pretending. It's like Dan Brown, you know, in the Da Vinci Code. At the beginning, there's this line of like, these are facts. And then, you know, some of them don't turn out to be facts. And so they're saying this is exactly what Plato is doing as well. Fair enough. That could be. But simply because an archaeologist thinks that something is possible doesn't mean it's possible. You know, you need to stick with the evidence. And the evidence is that Plato is saying that this is history, so you should stick with it until you can prove it is not. The assumption doesn't work the other way around as people want to have it. Now, the killer is this. Even in his own time, people in Athens are skeptical about what Plato is saying. And these skeptics jump in a boat and dash off to Egypt because this is where Plato's sources have heard about Atlantis. And they arrive in Egypt, they go to the temple, they speak to the priest, and in the full hope that this priest are going to say, I have no idea who you're talking about. I have no idea what you're talking about. Do you want to have a drink? Because you've come such a long way and, you know, have a pleasant journey back. Well, what the priest says is, yes, I remember that person coming here. I can show you the column and the walls on which these myths and stories are told. And so what happens is that his skeptics go back to Greece. And when everybody, unfortunately for them, asks them, so how did it go in Egypt? They are fortunately honest enough to actually confess that what they indeed were confronted with was the fact that these stories existed on the Egyptian walls. Now, again, let's be devil's advocate here and say that this is not necessarily evidence of the existence of Atlantis. But what we are confronted with is the fact that the ancient Egyptians told Plato as if it were and could be history that there was a lost civilization of Atlantis. This is evidence. This is proven to be the case. Now look at what the archaeologists are saying. They're saying that Plato made this up. That is simply untenable. And they do this trick time and time again. They focus in on certain things. And the reason why, you know, like it's great to have you as the devil's advocate. And we all need to be devil's advocate. But the reason why there is this specific desire to be a devil's advocate in explaining things away is because scientists have been doing this all too often and have been getting away with it all too often. The reason why people in the past were writing about Atlantis, were writing about Zeus, were writing about all of these myths, which we considered to be myths, is because what they were saying is this. Our ancestors, and in our own times, saw strange things. We are writing down these things because the reason why we're writing down these things is because we want to leave a record to our descendants that reality seems to be far weirder than our eyes seem to suggest to us. And so we hope that you have a continuous record of the fact that weirdness, if it were to happen in your time, just doesn't originate in your time, but that it has been happening for a very long period of time. Now,
Philip, before you go on, I'm going to get back to Gene's question real quick and kind of put it into a slightly, more applied context here. Let's say that there was an Atlantis. Let's say there was Lemuria. How do we know that these ancient pre-antediluvian, I guess, cultures didn't have high technology? They didn't have power tools. Maybe they had some sort of exotic ability to hover huge megalithic stones with sound is one theory that I've heard. And this would then put the whole idea of alien intervention or some sort of off planet or extraterrestrial intervention, you know, would be a moot point, because if perhaps humans did at one point in the very ancient past have exalted technology, that's one area that I think a lot of people who look as you do creatively at this ancient alien question, You have to factor in that possibility.
I do and I don't. First of all, I don't, because the topics I'm talking about do not date back to 20, 30,000 years or however old you want to do Atlantis. You know, the Atlantis question begins to take effect basically 9,000 BC and further back in time. So when we're talking to things like Pumapunku, we are definitely on this side of that divide. Now, you would then begin to maybe argue, which you can, that they were descendants of Atlantis. But I would then argue, where is the evidence? The evidence today is there, which says, whether it's in Babylonia or in other, you know, not all civilizations, but several of them. But again, let's stick with the Babylonian one, because that's the example I have been using so far for ease's sake. The Babylonian tradition about Awanis is not saying that they were given the gifts of civilization from some lost civilization of Atlantis or some other thing. They were saying they were given this gift by a creature which was non-human. That is the evidence. All the rest we can speculate about as wildly as possible. And, you know, is it possible that there are, let's say, you know, that there is somewhere evidence of a lost civilization of Atlantis and that they had high technology and that this evidence is somewhere on this planet? I think the answer is probably yes. But that yes doesn't mean that we can extrapolate that yes to, you know, let's whatever number we're going to use. Let's say five artifacts. It could be 1,000, it could be one. It doesn't matter. But the five artifacts which do fall in that category, you cannot extrapolate and then say, oh, well, this proves that all, you know, that this applies to everything. That's simply not the case. There is evidence.
Yeah. You can't use that broad of a brushstroke, obviously. But perhaps there were vestiges of this technology that did survive into the ancient, you know, cultures that we now know definitively that existed, the Sumerian, the Harappan culture, Egypt, obviously, maybe some ancient Mesoamerican cultures. So perhaps these are vestiges of information and technology that then disappeared. We don't really know. I just find it very, very intriguing that you would have similar myths that are found around the world that do suggest that there has been some sort of intervention on some level. Of course, you know, Viracocha comes to mind, Quetzalcoatl in the Mesoamerican systems and others in the East. So where do we go? I mean, how do we, if we can't get science to come forward and do the proper work and do the proper analysis of these sites and publish their work in a timely manner, I mean, what recourse do we have other than to write books and scratch our heads and speculate?
Before your head is scratched any further, and maybe we don't want to build up the source there, be graphic about it, let me tell our listeners, if you have a comment or a question about the show, write us, news@theparacast.com. News@theparacast.com. The book from Philip Coppens is called The Ancient Alien Question, A New Inquiry into the Existence, Evidence, and Influence of Ancient Visitors. You're with Gene and Chris. You're in
The Paracast.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Ray Perkins, a reclusive veteran burned out from the Gulf War, lives tortured by relentless, perplexing nightmares. Nightmares of a horrific battle in deep space and of a mysterious woman suffering in agony for her devastated world. A woman not yet born, calling across centuries to him. Then, a coincidence leads him to his destiny, his chance to alter the universe. Attack of the Rockoids. The former fiction editor for Star Wars and Indiana Jones, Robert Simpson, writes, "The soul of the novel Attack of the Rockoids lies in its heart and passion for building a convincing tale of a love that spans the galaxy. A thrilling story. Attack of the Rockoids is available now. Read a sample chapter and get a special discount off of the cover price at our website, rockoids.com. That's R-O-C-K-O-I-D-S. Attack of the Rockoids, a novel in the grand science fiction tradition.
Local Army Navy surplus stores are hard to find these days, but not military issue supplies. They're right here online at mainmilitary.com. That's right, just like the state, M-A-I-N-E, military.com. We have everything for true, total preparedness. MaineMilitary.com is not a typical website. It has much more than your old surplus store. Quality military-issue survival gear like canteens, mess kits, utensils, gas masks, filters, and chemical suits, magnesium fire-starting tools, strike anywhere, waterproof, and storm meshes, first aid kits, splints, tourniquets, parachute 550 cord, military manuals, sandbags by the bale, and a huge Molly assortment of vests and pouches for every need. Call 207-989-6783, 207-989-6783, or visit MaineMilitary.com. That's M-A-I-N-E, military.com, the Maine name in military supply.
Positive results from satisfied customers of Heart and Body Extract continue to pour into our website, hbextract.com.
This is Al from New Jersey. One day I saw your ad for Heart and Body Extract, and it mentioned that it would help me with angina, so I decided to order. I figure I had nothing to lose.
Heart and Body Extract supplies your body with everything it needs to balance itself and maintain optimal heart and circulatory health with no negative side effects.
I took the formula 3 times a day as directed, and I kid you not, within 4 days, my angina pain was completely gone.
Order HB Extract by calling 866-295-5305 or online at hbextract.com. That's 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
I could not believe it actually stopped the pain. Heart and Body Extract actually works. This is just an amazing product. Even the numbness in my hands is completely gone.
Heart and Body Extract, for a long and healthy life.
If you owe the IRS money you can't pay, then listen carefully, because you already know that the problem won't go away by itself. You can get help today from the leading tax expert in the country, Dan Pilla.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. The IRS isn't going to just forget about you. Right now, the IRS is hiring thousands of tax collectors to go after delinquent accounts just like yours. That's why you need to take action today, and I can help. I take a simple but proven approach to solving your tax debt problem. First, I stabilize collections so you don't have to worry about wage and bank levies. Next, I build a detailed plan to get your debt reduced to the fullest extent possible, sometimes even eliminated. Finally, I work with you every step of the way to get your problem solved once and for all. So call now for a free consultation. Call 1-800-346-6829.
Dan Pilla will solve your tax problem, guaranteed. He's helped thousands of people, and he can help you too. Call us today at 800-346-6829. That's 800-34-NO-TAX.
This is Hilly Rose, and I hope that you do listen to the Paracast, because you will learn a great deal about the paranormal.
We continue with Philip Coppens about ancient astronauts and focusing on a lot of different questions, as is his wont. Chris O'Brien asks a lengthy question. We give you the break to figure out the answer. Philip, what's your answer?
Well, you know, we are back to, let's go back to 1968. Erich von Däniken writes Chariots of the Gods and asked 237 question marks in that book. 45 years later, some of these question marks are still out there because science hasn't addressed these things. Now, that doesn't mean nothing has changed. So I used the example in the book of the Nazca Lines. The Nazca Lines in 1968 were something nobody had really heard of. There was a lone German woman called Maria Reike who almost single-handedly protected these lines. And Erich was told that he should go there and look at them. And what he does is he says, okay, this is interesting. These lines are clearly meant to be seen from the sky. He also points out that sections of the geoglyphs of the Nazca Lines look, and the keyword is here, like an airport.
I want to ask you something, but maybe phrase this in a little bit of a story I'll tell you. Okay? Now, I know what Erich von Däniken says about the Nazca Lines. Here's another story for you. Jim Moseley, publisher originally of Saucer News and Saucer Smear, used to go to Peru to, as they say, acquire artifacts for sale. Okay? He calls himself, quote-unquote, a grave robber of ancient graves. Yona Fortner, the guy I talked to you about before, the guy who was writing about ancient astronauts, back in the late 50s or early 60s, They went to Peru. Jim financed Yona's trip to Peru. And understand, Yona suffered from polio as a child. He was handicapped, was wheelchair bound, so this was rather difficult. He somehow, or had his assistants, go up on a ladder to look at the Nazca lines, and they could see it. They didn't have to be way up in the sky. What's your response?
No, you don't have to be way up in the sky to see them, but as a whole, they are meant to be seen from the sky. There is clearly a difference between seeing them from a ladder and seeing them from the sky. I'll get to a point which kind of like, you know, makes this even more apparent. When we are, you know, in 1968, and von Daniken puts this out there on the big canvas, he is basically, you know, confronting scientists with the fact that, A, they have no scientific publications about this. They have never looked at this. So they begin to do the investigation. Now, where are we roughly 45 years later? We have scientists out there who are saying that, in their opinion, these geoglyphs were indeed meant to be seen from the sky, and they are pointing out that it is, in their opinion, quite likely that the people of the Nazca culture, who, by the way, was extraordinary, they were a pyramid-building culture, that these people had hot air balloons with which they took to the sky and basically looked to the geoglyphs from their hot air balloons. And they have basically identified sections near the geoglyphs whereby it is believed that actually the hot air was created to power these balloons, you know, with fire. Now, when you look at, again, when you look at the skeptical scientist, he will say, well, you know, von Daniken said, first of all, he will not say like an airport. He will say that von Daniken said it was an airport. And he will say, you see, we've proven von Daniken wrong. No, what we have proven, if anything, is that von Daniken said these things were meant to be seen from the sky. And now we have scientists who are saying, actually, there is evidence to suggest that the people who were part of this culture actually did have flying capabilities. Now, at no point in time, at this moment in time, is there any evidence to suggest that this was ET. So in that case, the ancient alien question has a negative answer. But he has pushed science, first of all, into forcing them to, you know, address the issue and go and explore these things. And I think after 45 years, science has been looking into some of these things, but it has not looked at all too detailed in some of these things. And again, when they are confronted with the ultimate thing, when they can't almost get underneath it, they will do so just as a reaction to ancient aliens, because of its popularity. You have students who are asking their history professors and their archaeology professors in American universities,
yeah,
and their answer is, we know. And when the students ask,
yeah,
well, how do you know? The professors say, we know. So say it louder. And you know what? Yeah, like,
we just
it sounds
know.
Like The Shadow, you know, in the movie The Shadow, where he always says, the shadow knows, or I know.
Right. Well, here's another one. Philip, how about the kite flyers? I remember some years back, I saw it in, I think, National Geographic. They had found some graves in the Nazca area that featured interned bodies with their giant kites. And one theory was floated. I remember that these guys actually were possibly directing the construction of the Nazca lines, flying in these tethered, very large kites.
Yes, and other research, which is happening, I think, in the California desert, is about the possibility that some of these stones which were used in the Giza Plateau also involved kites. So this kite technology is something else which our ancestors seem to have developed relatively commonly in our past to get around certain problems of building or construction. So, you know, again, even when it comes to the kite technology, you know, the people who are involved in this are amateur scientists who are begging mainstream science to get involved and on board with them, and they quite often interest television programs more easily to help them experiment and help them pay for some of the experiments that they are willing to do, rather than find scientists who, you know, actually should be more eager and definitely have more time and more capabilities of doing this. But it's slow progress.
Okay, what is the official word from science about the Nazca lines? Just artwork?
Well, there is no such thing as a consensus view. In fact, there are, and this actually isn't a theory from an acceptance scientist, from an official scientist, but like, you know, Tony Morrison kind of like did some research on the Nazca lines, and he basically felt that they were to be seen by the shaman during his out-of-body experience, and that he would fly over the Nazca lines as such. Again, everything about the Nazca lines, you know, they say that they were scraped off and that they have been there for hundreds of years. And that is pretty much it. They have identified that there are certain places along those geoglyphs, which, had to do with ancestor worship. When you ask them what was first, there is no clear consensus view. When you ask them whether the geoglyphs were before, the lines, or vice versa, there is no consensus view. You know, there have been nearby structures found, including human remains, grave goods, and pyramids. There's a clear connection between those and the Nazca lines. But again, when you ask which specific phase of that culture would have done this, you get several answers, but no clear uniform answer. And it is simply because science is not, you know, addressing these things. If there is an archaeologist working on the Nazca lines and you ask him, so what are you doing? He will say that he's working on, you know, slightly joking here, the west side of the fifth pyramid, and that he has no idea what's happening on the east side of the fourth pyramid. And again, in 10 years, he will publish about the west side of the fifth pyramid and will have to wait for somebody to kind of like, you know, write about the east side of the fourth pyramid. But nobody is doing, okay, let's look at everything here and see what we have. It's just not happening. Archaeology is not doing it.
They're basically treating them as separate events, not integrated.
Yeah, it is so isolationist. It's incredible.
Sounds like a case of tunnel vision. Go ahead, Chris.
One thing we do know is, you know, of course, one of the most famous postulations that von Däniken came up with was the famous lid of the first found Mayan tomb of the King Pakal, and the sarcophagus lid, which is 12 feet by 5 feet, I think, weighs 10,000 pounds. It's underneath the Temple of Inscriptions at Palenque. And, of course, von Däniken's interpretation of the figure, assumed to be Pakal, looks like he's riding a rocket ship.
I'll tell you what, we're going to ride this rocket ship. With Philip Coppens, with Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter, and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also, print catalogs. Convert from so many formats, I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You could save money when you buy Graphic Converter. Use the coupon code Night Owl. Use the coupon code Night Owl to get a special price for Graphic Converter. Go to LemkeSoft.com. That's LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com.
Survival of the fittest. In any and all situations, survival is your number one priority. That requires being tough and thinking smart. And the folks at Freeze Dry Guy are going to help you do just that. They have the long-range patrol ration entrees, what they call the brick pack. When you're in survival mode, it is absolutely the best item for your survival pack or bug-out bag. You can go farther, faster, and carry more food with the LRP cold weather ration entrees. Not only do these long-lasting, durable entrees help sustain you or your family through the harshest environment or situation, they are by far the most delicious of their kind. No contest. With a variety of tasty entrees, you can't beat the LRP brick packs. Let Freeze Dry Guy help you in your survival situations. Go to freezedryguy.com. That's freezedryguy.com. Or call 866-404-3663. That's 866-404-FOOD.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, I'm Mark Craighead, founder of Crossbreed Holsters. I designed our top-selling holster, the Super Tuck Deluxe, to solve the problems of being poked, pinched, and gouged while carrying concealed. The Super Tuck Deluxe is the most comfortable, most concealable holster on the market today. We offer a 2-week free trial and a lifetime warranty.
Visit us at crossbreedholsters.com. Don't forget, crossbreedholsters.com.
That's the sound of your door being kicked in by an intruder with a single kick. That's the sound of the same door now protected by the Door Sentinel at MySafeDoor.com. Go to MySafeDoor.com right now and watch the amazing video. At MySafeDoor.com, you'll learn how to turn your home into a fortress with the Door Sentinel. 16 kicks later, and the Door Sentinel is still holding strong. MySafeDoor.com. That's MySafeDoor.com.
Kurt 70, author of UFO Mysteries, and you're listening to the Paracast.
Well, we're not going to come down to Earth for a while, because you're in the Paracast with Gene and Chris and Philip Coppins exploring ancient mysteries. And Chris was talking about another fascinating possibility. Chris?
It actually becomes rather mundane. Back in the late 60s, early 70s, when von Däniken really first hit, it started selling millions of books, I might add. One of the things that I remember from that time period, of course, I devoured everything that he wrote early on. And the whole idea of Pakal on that sarcophagus lid is riding a rocket up into the sky. As I was saying before the break, at the time, we hadn't deciphered the Mayan glyphs, the Mayan language. We only knew about 5% of the language. In the intervening years, archaeologists have pretty much deciphered the entire Mayan language, with the exception of how to pronounce the names of some of the gods. They haven't been able to figure out how to pronounce all the T's and X's and P's and L's. But one thing that we do know is every single bit of information on that sarcophagus lid, and it's not Pakal riding a rocket ship up into the sky. He's actually sliding down the Tree of Life into Shebilba, the Mayan underworld. And he's preparing to meet the Wheats monster. And that is the conventional wisdom in archaeology. Linda Sheely and her team did a magnificent job in the 80s of deciphering the language. So in one sense, you're refuting, well, academia is refuting the interpretation by von Däniken of Pakal's lid. But at the same time, this is still being touted as evidence of, you know, ancient Mayan being somehow connected with the stars and possibly E.T. Where do you come down on that?
Well, in my book, I go into that and basically show that as one piece of evidence where von Däniken has been refuted in his speculation. I think it's always extremely dangerous, and you know, this is not just something to Eric's point, but to everybody's, to interpret a visual. The Lord Pakal thing is probably the most famous of it, but it happens also in the temple complex of Dendera. I didn't put it in the book because it was too complex to actually explain it, but it is on my website, philipcoppins.com, if you want to go into it. But in the Dendera case, there is this depiction in a chamber deep inside the complex, seldom visited by people because you need special permission, of people which seem to hold giant light bulbs.
Light bulbs. They do look like light bulbs, too.
And, you know, absolutely, they exactly do like giant light bulbs. Just like when you turn Lord Pakal's tombstone around 90 degrees, it looks as if he's riding a rocket ship. But they're not light bulbs. They are, and again, it's actually too complex to go into here, but the end conclusion of it is that this chamber had to do with the preparation of a sacred marriage ritual involving the resident deities, some of whose statues were held there, and that this depiction was one of, I might be mistaken with the number, it's either four or six. And when you put them all four or six in the proper context, you really have the preparation of the statue for its sacred marriage ritual, which is about to be performed. So when you take things out of context, or if you're just impressed by an image, then you might get it wrong, and it's always dangerous to speculate there. But again, I'm also of the conviction that an image alone, specifically when it comes to a drawing rather than a photograph, it cannot be there as the best evidence. It can be used as an indication or a possibility. But as soon as you were pointing out, the text get translated, you will either be quickly proven right or quickly be proven wrong.
Well, another thing that in terms of enigmas, historical visual artifacts that are, in my opinion, most enigmatic, the Piri Reis map, which you have a very, very good reproduction of in your book, by the way, that is, to me, one of the strongest bits of evidence that we have to push a case for some sort of ability to see the planet surface from the air in an ancient time, way before there was a possibility of any sort of flight, because as most of our listeners know, the map, I think, comes from Turkey. It's probably a reproduction of another map. You go over the artifact very well in your book, by the way. But it shows the coastline of South America, and most importantly, it shows the coastline of Antarctica before it appeared to be covered with ice. Where do you come down on that? That's in my mind, one of the best, I think, most enigmatic artifacts that we have.
Before you answer, Philip, believe it or not, Major Donald Kehoe, when he was speculating about UFOs coming from outer space, the Piri Reis map was used as evidence of possible ET visitation and mapping many, many, many years ago. What's your take?
Writing that aspect of the Piri Reis map was extraordinarily difficult because Piri Reis map discussion could have become one of these things which took over the entire book. So I had to try and reduce it into its proper framework. And I really took on board everything which the proponents of the Piri Reis map for its anomalous origins said. And I also took on board what all the skeptics were saying. Because, again, we are confronted with a drawing. We're not confronted there's analysis involved. And analysis by default is more subjective than some other things, than analysis by machinery, for example. The indications to me are that at this moment in time, the Piri Reis map and its showing of the coastline of South America and the coastline of Antarctica, it seems to be on the side of those proposing that this is indeed showing those coastlines of South America and the Antarctica. Now, it's not a battle which I consider to be completely won for those proponents. Again, there is room for interpretation. But somebody really needs to go into that Piri Reis map controversy with extraordinarily open focus and extraordinary detail before a rigid conclusion can be drawn. And that research hasn't happened. Right now, I tried to word this, I looked for the best evidence which the skeptics could throw at the Piri Reis map, and it falls short. They haven't been able to use their term, debunk it.
What is the official skeptic explanation, or is there more than one?
Again, there is more than one, but basically they are pointing out that it's not as clear-cut as some of the proponents of the Piri-Reis map are saying. They're basically saying that there are still sections missing from the South American coastline, even if you take everything on board there. They're addressing some other problems. You know, nobody is saying that the Piri-Reis map. Actually, before I continue, actually one fun comment was when somebody was told that the Piri-Reis map, you know, showed all of these things, the only thing he had to say was that, well, you know, in the following decades, there were better maps than the Piri-Reis map. And it's like, that's not the point. You know, it's like, yes, today there are better maps than the Piri-Reis map. It's not at all the point. But, you know, the thing is that the Piri-Reis map was good enough and it's clear enough and it's pointing out enough anomalies. And basically the linchpin, the critical piece of evidence, so to speak, is that the southern section of South America of the Piri-Reis map is either precisely that and or it's Antarctica. And that is kind of like the winning grace at this moment in time for the proponents that the Piri-Reis map contains extraordinary information, because it is showing something. It is showing a coastline in detail. And, you know, it's not somebody's imagination. It's not somebody who just drew lines because he didn't know what was going on. It's clearly based on something. And that is kind of like the winning grace as to why really the bunkers cannot be shown to be right. But again, the Piri-Reis map is a very tough one. There's an awful lot of analysis involved, and there needs to be done an extraordinary amount of analysis by somebody who's basically willing to devote his or her entire life to it before we are going to have a definitive analysis, which, you know, is probably going to be extremely controversial, and in my opinion is going to show that the likes of Hapgood and other people who have always said that this map contained anomalies, you know, it's going to, I think, show that they were right.
Now, I'll tell you what, right or wrong, we have Philip Coppens with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you'd like to listen to GCN programs on the go, I have great news. GCN has created a Droid and iPhone application, and it's free. Just as easy as going to GCNlive.com, click on the banner, and download. Before you know it, you'll be listening to your favorite hard-hitting GCN shows, live or on demand, right on your Droid or iPhone, 24/7 and on the go. So download the Droid and iPhone app free by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Thanks again for listening to GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com.
We the people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit and carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Ted Anderson, I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.